A Bombay Symphony. First movement, Allegro.
The National Centre for the Performing Arts is the Bombay equivalent of London's South Bank Centre. The NCPA is India's biggest and most prestigious cultural institution. Its five separate theatres were funded by the House of Tata, India's largest and most philanthropic business empire, and built on government land at the far end of the city's Art Deco Marine Drive. The NCPA has a busy calendar of events ranging from Indian and Western music and drama to experimental films and contemporary art exhibitions. It plays host to leading international orchestras, including the London Symphony and the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra, and is the home of the Symphony Orchestra of India, the first attempt at a professional national orchestra. I'm Zaria Masani, and in this program I'll be asking if there's a genuine new appetite here for Western classical music, and whether that's generating new controversies among Indian artists and audiences. What did you think of the concert?
I think this particular conductor brought out the best in the national anthem. I've never heard it played, you know, so beautifully.
I think they're doing a very great job here.
Would you have liked to see a few more Indian players in the orchestra?
Definitely, most definitely. We would like something on the basis of what Venezuela is doing.
You know, I hear a very interesting sound on that. In relation to the accompaniment, and you can lean on that and bring out a brighter tone.
Sarò contento nel mio tormento se quel bel labbro baciar potrò.
The Symphony Orchestra of India may be new, but the subcontinent has had more than a century of exposure to Western classical music. Under the Raj, virtually every Indian town had its own brass band. Several cities had amateur pianists and chamber groups, and Christian churches and faith schools had their own choirs. The Portuguese Goan community had a particularly rich tradition of choral music. One of its most outstanding performers is the world-class soprano Patrícia Rosário. Now a teacher at the Royal College of Music in London, she returns to India several times a year to give masterclasses to aspiring young singers here.
I come from a musical family. My mother was a quite well-known Indian classical vocalist.
Why did you not follow your mother into Indian classical music?
I do play an Indian classical instrument, and I listen to a lot of Indian classical music myself. But somehow, when it comes to singing, I feel the way that the Western classical musicians, they use their voice in a really healthy way, which I feel is not present in Indian classical music.
Do you get friends of yours and relations saying, why are you doing Western classical music? You should be doing Indian music. You're just selling yourself to some foreign culture.
I do have someone saying that, but I tell that no, this is the music that I love, so I have my choice, so I can do whatever I want.
A Bombay Symphony, second movement, Andante.
I'm with Patrícia Rosário, who's just been teaching a masterclass with two very talented students, and you improved them enormously in the space of 10 minutes. One of the major developments has been the Symphony Orchestra of India, and I have heard criticisms that there's no point in importing expensive musicians from Kazakhstan if you can't train musicians at home.
I agree with that idea. The orchestra's been going for 10 years, and they started with more players who are Indian than they have now, and that's a bad sign. I just feel that there needs to be more faith put in the Indian musicians. I feel there's too much money being charged. If you study at the school that they're starting, there's a school of string teaching. Only the very rich would be able to afford to send their students.
The reason the SOI is having to import most of its musicians from the former Soviet Republic of Kazakhstan is that the British Raj did little to provide the kind of conservatories and musical infrastructure that the Russians gave their former empire, or indeed that the Chinese are offering now. With 50 million Chinese estimated to be learning the piano and producing some of the world's top performers, why is India so far behind? I put the question to Khushru Santuk, director of the National Centre for Performing Arts. He's the founder-director of the Symphony Orchestra of India and an avid connoisseur of Western opera.
There is a passionate love of opera among the Chinese, and they have the money to teach thousands and thousands of students. I'm told there are 8,000 cello students in the Shanghai Conservatoire. But the trouble here has been, sorry to say this, terrible mediocrity in the performance areas as well as not good teachers. One of the reasons why I've started this orchestra is to try and give Mumbai what we're capable of doing. What we did is we set out first to interview Indian musicians. Give the Indians a chance, but if they don't measure up, so we have 13. Now, if you look at the globalization of everything, if you see, for example, the number of top people that are heading Indian firms and the number of Indians who are heading top American firms, you will find that this concept of nationalism, I think it's a sort of a, it's not a good concept. Let the best people come in.
Khushru Santuk made a convincing plea for attracting the best available talent. Will a new generation of young Indians rise to the challenge? There's certainly a thriving new domestic market for Western music education, for those who can afford to pay for it.
Tanuja, you just walked into the room and you are running this project. It's the Furtado School of Music. In cooperation with the Cathedral School, where I was a kid, I wouldn't like to say how long ago. We never had anything as sophisticated as the kind of equipment you've got, because, I mean, all the kids have their individual keyboards with computer screens and headphones, and there are, what, about over 20 of them in this room. Is there a growing demand from parents?
Touchwood, yes. So to give you a perspective, in the last 2.5 years, we almost have 2,500 children learning Western classical musical instrument of some form.
Is Western classical music overtaking Indian classical music, do you think?
Yes, there is a change. Today, the Western classical music is far more acceptable. I mean, and today, if I want to go abroad and study, it will add if I know one instrument like a piano and I have the required grades. And then the aspirational parents, you know, they call them the tiger mom. It starts as a trend where a mother is proud to say, I'm sending my child for a piano class. And a lot of tiger moms are there.
2, 3, 4. 2, 3, 4. No, you made a mistake, okay?
Founded a century and a half ago, Furtado's Music Shop is one of colonial Bombay's few surviving landmarks. It's still owned by a family of Portuguese Goan descent. Tanuja's brother-in-law, Anthony Gomes, runs the company's booming sales in Western musical instruments.
Until 1994, India didn't permit import of consumer goods. Pianos came in that, all musical instruments came in that category as well. So now, because of the availability of good instruments, people are motivated to persevere with their piano playing. But now it is new entrance into this particular sector.
So, Anthony, we're here in your piano showroom.
Yes.
This is very impressive. Several grand pianos. You have several Steinways and Yamahas. Presumably, these come at quite a high price. Who are your clientele? Who do you sell them to?
Well, people in India can afford anything and everything.
Are these a bit of a status symbol?
I think the piano per se is a bit of a status symbol. It's very much a furniture piece. So therefore, one of our biggest clientele are not the owners who are going to buy them, but their interior designers and architects who visit. And they have specifications of color and finish and design, including so much as the exact size specifications. And sometimes you can't sell a piano because it's 2 centimeters too big.
From one end of the Bombay musical spectrum, I've come to the other. It's the red light district. It's in a very congested, rather deprived part of the city. It's notorious. It's protected by corrupt police. There are pimps, gangsters around. In the middle of all this, there's a tiny community centre which runs a unique project that brings music to the lives of these sex workers. It's organised by a group called Songbound, which is international, linked up with a local project called Prerana, which works with the children of the sex workers here. Prithi, you are the organiser at this centre here. How do you think music relates to what your project is trying to achieve?
Prerana is working to end second-generation prostitution. The music activity is something which gives children that respite from the daily nightmares that they face in the red light areas. It will help them exercise their right to play, which is a basic child's right.
They've just been singing Waltzing Matilda. Yes. Would they not be more comfortable learning Indian songs?
They are being exposed to a different culture, firstly. Secondly, they are being taught in English. So they are actually getting to learn some English words because they all come from Marathi medium education and there's absolutely no exposure to English.
How do the mothers respond? Are they proud?
They are very proud. They are very proud. There was one mother who had tears in her eyes. She said, "I couldn't understand a word, but at least they were in tune." And she was very happy, that mother.
So you're bringing light and sunshine into a very dark place. And now, shall we go and hear the children sing?
Yes, we should.
A Bombay Symphony, third movement, Scherzo.
I'm on the lawns of the Willingdon Club. It's the most elite location in Bombay, set up in the 1920s for the Indians to mix with their colonial rulers. Tonight it's playing host to the Symphony Orchestra of India. The audience is a microcosm of the Bombay audience for Western classical music. Very westernized, very elite, quite affluent. We're on the rather idyllic lawns of the club, surrounded by an 18-hole golf course, the only green part of the concrete jungle that is Bombay.
Buying tickets and coming and supporting us. This is your orchestra, and I hope you'll be very proud of it. Thank you very much.
The orchestra has just come onto stage. From where I'm sitting, they don't look particularly Indian.
You think getting 70 people from Kazakhstan, paying for their flights, paying for their board, paying them £1,000 a session for 4 concerts, couldn't that money be given to Indians? We should have our own people. It would have taken perhaps 10, 15 years, but we would have had a truly Indian symphony orchestra. It's only when constantly 60, 70 people are playing together that you create an orchestral sound. Every time SOI performs, new people are there. I'm sorry, I don't agree with this.
Ginny Dinshaw has been the doyenne of Bombay's music scene since the 1930s. She's the founder director of the Bombay Chamber Orchestra, a long-established team of dedicated amateurs, ranging from young schoolchildren to investment bankers and elderly music buffs. But the major problem for homegrown Western classical music is the punitive taxation imposed on it by the cultural Philistines who run the local state government.
Our Maharashtra state government, I'm sorry, is very anti-Western.
Is it Maharashtrian chauvinism?
Yeah, when I approached them for tax exemption, because we are heavily taxed, 20-25% on tickets, and that we are a charitable organization. We train our young people free. We give them instruments if they can't afford them. And the answer is, do Indian music, we won't tax you. All Indian culture is exempted. Only Western culture, theatres, music are taxed. I had written to the late Prime Minister Indira Gandhi. She exempted me from taxation. But she was a great lover of Western music. I believe Bach was her favorite composer.
A Bombay Symphony, fourth movement, Allegro Moderato.
I'm on my way to see an artist called Shirish Malhotra. He started as a flautist with the Symphony Orchestra of India, and he's now playing with a jazz band, and they're rehearsing in a disused cotton press in the old industrial suburbs of Bombay. Shirish tried to make a living as a flautist with the Symphony Orchestra of India. He found it impossible because they played so infrequently and they didn't allow him to play with other groups and in other venues.
I was hoping that, you know, one day they would develop into an orchestra that was more inclusive and more Indian, and, you know, that would be more sustainable. But over the four years that I was there, I've not seen the Indian participation really grow.
And what is your main source of income? Is it from jazz? Is it from classical music?
It's very varied. A lot of recordings, so recordings for independent albums, recordings for Bollywood, recordings for background music, a lot of live gigs, which includes club gigs, corporate gigs, whatever, private events, and yeah, all sorts of things.
So it is possible to make a career and to make a living as a musician in Bombay?
Yes, but it was necessary to kind of diversify and be able to improvise, you know, be able to jam with other musicians.
One of the organizations trying to make a musical profession sustainable for young Indians like Shirish is the Meli Mehta Foundation. It was set up by the famous Bombay-born conductor Zubin Mehta in memory of his violinist father, who struggled and failed to make a musical career for himself in post-colonial Bombay. Its director is Mehru Jijiboy.
Mehru, we are in this wonderful old building with ornate stucco facade, one of the traditional old buildings of Bombay. Can you tell us what the Meli Mehta Foundation is doing here in this building?
We have 500 children coming into this 100-year-old premise, studying music in various disciplines. So we have group classes, we have three children's choirs, and we have teachers for violin, piano, viola, guitar. And we hope to expand by offering wind instruments as well. And we are doing a lot of outreach work in municipal schools in the suburbs of Bombay, where we have another almost 600 children. All our teaching that is done in municipal schools outside of our premises is all free. The first thing one has to do is start at the very grassroots and give very good music education. And this is something that we don't have.
Is that the problem here, that there really, I mean, apart from organizations like yourself and the National Center for Performing Arts, there really isn't any institutional support for the kind of training you're talking about. And government isn't interested in it. If anything, the Maharashtra government is quite hostile to it.
Exactly. Because really we need a whole conservatory of music. Because I think you have to train thousands of musicians before you can pick a few who are fit to play in an orchestra.
Until we have a Curtis and a Juilliard and an IU School of Music and a Royal Academy and a Royal College and a Vienna Hochschule in every city with a 90-year tradition, at least, we should not expect a quick fix. Oh yes, let's get our Indian musicians to play in what we have put forward as the professional orchestra in Mumbai.
Zain Dalal is the charismatic young Oxford-educated resident conductor of the Symphony Orchestra of India, who are busy rehearsing for their first performance of the season.
We have started our own school here, and the education that we're giving to these youngsters, 11, 12, 13, 14, in the next 5 years when they're 17 and can audition with the SOI, we will get a huge crop of people into the orchestra in the right way because we've taken that tutelage into our own hands. How useful would it be at all? It's a rhetorical question, to say, ah, yes, that orchestra's quite good for India. No, you want them to say that orchestra's quite good or very good, full stop. We can't have any of these brown-skinned, photo-op engendered, rush to judgment issues, because this is not an Olympic team. It does not and should not have national boundaries. It is an international art form that requires what it requires on its own terms.
So what defines the ownership? If at what point does it become an Indian orchestra rather than an international orchestra?
It is an Indian orchestra because it bears the name, and it is the first orchestra of its kind in the nation that represents this nation and this city. It is not that it has to be an Indian orchestra, an ethnically Indian group. No.
Why do you think India in that respect is so much less amenable to Western classical sound than, say, the Chinese are?
There's one issue that is paramount to the whole thing. The Indian psyche is completely wrapped in this extraordinarily rich culture of Indian music. The extraordinarily rich, extraordinarily complex and absolutely unassailable presence of Indian music in every minute of every day.
Arvind Parikh divides his time between running a successful business and teaching the sitar, the queen of classical Indian instruments.
The Western music is usually in schools which are usually schooled by rich people.
There is an argument we've heard that people are finding Western music more aspirational in terms of a certain kind of upward mobility, being able to work for foreign multinationals, travel abroad, and that it's something that looks good on your CV if you're applying for a job, rather than saying you played the sitar or the shehnai. Do you feel there is a kind of snobbery still around Western classical music?
I don't know whether I would use the word snobbery, but the wave of globalization naturally has an impact. But we all the Indian musicians like to believe that the roots of Indian music is so deep that we will not shake out from our roots and be swept away. I don't think so.
May not suggest that there is competition going on because we would lose it hands down.
And then one has to ask, is it worth doing it? You know, if India already has its own rich musical heritage, it has a rich popular music scene, it has a rich classical music scene, what role is Western music playing here?
If one realizes that music is a divine shared grace, then I assume that we have a right to Western music in India as much as the people in Stockholm had the right to a good curry.
The Indian equivalent of enjoying a curry in Stockholm might well be Elgar's quintessentially English Nimrod theme, played by the Symphony Orchestra of India to an enraptured Indian audience on the shores of the Arabian Sea. Despite all the problems of scarce resources, poor musical infrastructure, and now the cultural chauvinism of India's newly elected Hindu nationalist government, ventures like the SOI and the many Western orchestras and chamber groups who visit here do inspire a growing and younger audience for India's renewed love affair with Western classical music.
Some years back, there was always this danger of audiences dying out. The young audience is coming to concerts. That's what we feel.
The uniqueness, the greatness of this country is various cultures which we absorb and make it part of our own. And Western classical music, first, it was monopolized by the Parsis and the Christians. Now, Hindus, Muslims, Buddhists, and people from the lower classes are taking it up also, which to me is a positive sign.